If you want to take part in the Christmas card stream, now is the last chance for your card to arrive in time. Don't delay. Your host, Millennial Woes.
Hello and welcome back to Millennial X, and I'm now here with Ava, who is an English tweeter, as it says. Ava, would you like to introduce yourself to the audience?
Hi, I am Ava. Most of you probably have no idea who I am, but I was visited by the counter-terror police for inciting violence online. And my dad's decorative samurai sword got robbed. And that's how most people know of me.
All right. So would you like to tell, your background and how you got to this, and then we'll go into the visit from the counter-terror police.
In what sense do you mean how I got to this, how I ended up getting visited, or just how I ended up with the opinions I do?
Yes, how you ended up with these opinions.
Oh, well, that's interesting. In high school, I was actually a lesbian, and I was in the group of, like, emos, gays, transgenders, you know, the whole shebang. I had, like, the back of my head shaved, I wore pants and Doc Martens to school, like, really bullyable stuff. And then, I don't really fully know, I think it was mostly around COVID, and I've now become with a strong belief that if you remove people from situations that they're given, like, peer acceptance, they will revert back to factory settings. So when I was not around these people that were encouraging this kind of behaviour and lifestyle, I just kind of reverted back. And then all the COVID conspiracies came up and all the BLM riots and other personal stuff happened, and this group weren't there during any of the stuff that happened, so I ended up distancing and mingling with other people. And then over time, from that, just the more you read, the more you hear and see just in day-to-day life, I just naturally arrived with the opinions I do.
Okay, there's a lot there that I could ask about, because you know, I haven't been in school for 24 years now, so it's a long time, and I'm sure that the culture in British schools must be very different nowadays. Back then in the 90s, it was, they had official lines on things like that, but people would still get, I mean, it was still basically fairly traditional. What is the atmosphere in a British school these days?
Ooh, I went to a really small one. And the school I went to was actually in the top 100 worst schools in England alone. So already you're not off to a great start. But it's weird, you weren't actually as bullied as much as probably you should have been or deserved to be at the time. Because it was just normal then, so not many of us were actually bullied. There was like one girl who was a bit mean to us, but it didn't go anything past calling us the worm firm, so that's pretty dealable. You can live with that one. But, because obviously I live in Liverpool, and Liverpool is very left-wing voting. And they did, because obviously was it the 2020 elections where it was Boris Johnson and Corbyn? Was that 2020?
Yeah, I think that was 2019.
2019. And they did a mock voting in our school where everyone would anonymously vote. And then they didn't tell us this, but they read out the answers in our form class of the amount for each. So when it came out six voted Tory, it becomes like a witch hunt of who are the Tories in this class. Me and two others admitted to it. And there was this one lad, Elliot, that was being bullied in class over it. And the teacher told people, like, stop bullying him. And they had said, but miss, he voted Tory this morning. And she, honest to God, went, oh, then carry on, and just ignored it the rest of the lesson. And so my mum, like a crusader of justice, called up the school about it, because I was texting her through the day, like, oh my God. And she called up and the head of year spoke to her. And he said to her, yeah, but we're in Liverpool, aren't we? What does that have to do about anything? You can allow a child to be bullied because you're in Liverpool. What? The Scousers don't have a good reputation, and that does not help it. So, and because I was in the debate club as well, and the debate teacher was the only right-wing teacher, and he had been told that he's not allowed to talk about his political views in class, but all the others were fine. So it was very much not an equal forum.
Yeah, this is the kind of thing that I would imagine happening, where the default is left-wing, and it's perfectly fine, and it's not even politics, it's just being a good person. And then everything right-wing is politics, and that's bad. Yeah. And this is how they control the discourse. Was stuff like transgenderism, gay feminism, was that kind of thing promoted, and diversity and all of that? Because that's what, you know, people like me, this is what we hear about British schools today, that it's full of this conditioning. Yeah. Is that true?
See, not until later on. It was fine to begin with. I think there was only about like 3 non-white kids in the whole school, which was quite unusual for the time. They didn't really seem to touch on it very much until later years, and then they started giving us talks on, you know, privilege and, you know, because they started then cutting out lessons to do PSHE classes, and it'd be about privilege and race and stuff like that. They don't know why. But they cut out RE for it. They stopped teaching us about religion to teach it, which you could argue liberalism is a religion at this point. But it would be, honest to God, like 3 hours of the week would be about, like, cultural, social issues of their agenda as well.
That's amazing. That's certainly very different from my experience. And I did do religious studies, actually. I mean, it touched on things like that, but it was about Judaism, Islam, Buddhism, and some moral issues as well. But it sounds like that there are three hours of every week. That's a lot. But it doesn't sound like a lot, but it is a lot. That means like a weekly dose of this stuff. And would that be very much pushing this agenda?
Yeah. There wasn't room to disagree. If you, because I did sociology as a GCSE, and so, because obviously you have like the Marxists, functionalists, feminists and stuff like that, and I fell more on the functionalist side, and I swear to God, 90% of the class were Marxists. I don't think they even really understood it. You know, you're doing GCSE, you've only got a very basic level of understanding. But if you agreed with anything to do with a functionalist, you'd be like, what are you, a Tory? Like, and what if I am? Or the teacher actually made a mistake of saying people who choose to be gay. And she was Greek, so obviously she just chose her words badly. And this poor woman got berated by a whole class for saying choose to be gay. Because it's not a choice.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. So that was the teacher being schooled by the pupils.
Yeah, quite. I think she actually got really upset about it as well.
Yeah, yeah, she would, because that's a misstep. I mean, that's a big faux pas. I mean, you say there's no room to disagree. That I think that's the sort of thing that I've heard about, where it's supposedly a discussion, but. But it's really not, because you're not allowed to disagree. If you do, there will be social consequences, maybe others. Nobody wants to do that. So is that how you ended up choosing to be a lesbian, so to speak?
No, that was actually just kind of a freak occurrence. There was just for some reason a girl that I thought I liked. You know, you're 12, you're confused, you're hormonal, you don't know what's going on. There was a girl I thought I liked, and then the group I was, this is actually what I find interesting, the group I was in, most of them started off straight, it was just this one girl was a lesbian. And then as time went on, everyone in the group started taking off. They started becoming gay, bi, trans, and then the more social media rises, the more extreme it's getting. It's like you go from going, I'm bi, to, I'm bi, but 70% gay. And then it gets to 90, and then you're a full-blown lesbian. And then COVID happens, and you're separating, you're straight again. And it's bizarre how much, especially at that time, it's...
Yeah, yeah. So was it like a sort of competition where, you, well, I'm more gay than you kind of thing?
No, but that would have been quite funny. It was more... I would like to think I would lose. I think I would come third. I would have come third in my group. But I think it was more everyone was kind of in awe of this one girl. Because the first day we'd turned up, she turned up and she was quite tall. She had like half her head shaved, her hair was dyed blue, and she was totally confident. And the thing with the rest of us is we were not very confident at all. And so you're then feeding off this girl's confidence. You don't actually want to be with her. You want to be her, but you don't realise these feelings. Yeah, you think, I'm gay. All I can think about is this girl. It's like, no, you don't want her. You wish you were like her. And these thoughts then overtake. And then you've got social media heavily pushing, like, gay stuff and telling you, hey, if you think this way, you're gay. And that's great. Being gay is better than being straight anyway.
Yeah, you want to be the vanilla option. You want to be something. You want to be something interesting. Yeah, I can understand. And that thing is—it's an interesting point there because I think this is quite typical, especially of lesbians. But I think it's also true of gay men as well. That really, it's not that you are attracted to him; it's that you are you want to. You that person has some quality that you covet, that you're jealous of. And it becomes a fixation. And I think at that age, that can very easily happen.
Definitely. I have my godfathers are actually gay as well, which, of course, doesn't then help when they're taking you to pride parades for a day out. But they didn't know. But one of them, what I find interesting is one of them is, like, very clearly gay. Like, not to be mean, he would agree, he's quite obvious. But he, at one point in his life, was married to a woman with a child. And this was, like, in between being gay. And then he went back afterwards. And I think it's interesting. It's where people say, no, you're born gay. Why do you have to be born? It's almost like you're not valid if you weren't born gay. It's like people can't accept that different phases in your life, different things can be true, different situations can make someone, it's like where you get prostitutes who after 10 years turn lesbian because they've seen the very worst of men, doesn't make it, you know, wrong, whatever, it's just different.
In that case, it's completely understandable. They've seen men and they've been, yeah, they're going to see the very worst of men, as you say. So of course, they're not going to want, in their own private lives, they're not going to want to be with men. It's an understandable phenomenon. They're going to go to the other side, so to speak, just for a change.
5 years living with a woman and they'll go straight again. Who can do it? Yeah. I don't know why they would want to.
That's a thing as well. That I mean, I know there's a theory that lesbianism is not really a real thing. I don't want to imply that you agree with this or anything. I'm not even sure what I think about it. It's just something I've heard, a theory, but it's not really a real thing. It's just female sexuality when it's sort of dormant, when something has gone wrong with the woman's relations with men, and so this is, it defaults to this. It's like, well, at least I can have some sort of affection from other women, sort of thing.
You find that many lesbians who, like middle-aged lesbians, have a kid from a previous marriage and the marriage is broken down and now they're lesbians. You find that so often. It sounds so mean. I think lots of times when you, and I know people have this theory, but that lesbians oftentimes are just women who can't get men because they all, a lot of them, I mean, you get some very attractive lesbians. I mean, I know Angelina Jolie dated some women. No man's going to turn away Angelina Jolie. She wasn't struggling. But you see some women who, like, the whole fat and blue-haired stereotype, and you think, well, What other option is there? What other choice do you have at that point? That is so mean, I know that.
But it is a thing where there are some women who are just not naturally attractive to men. Let's put it that way. And so, yeah, what are they going to do? It sounds cruel, but I think we're just observing something that is almost certainly the reality. But yeah, with obviously in this day and age, you know, 20, 30, 40, 50 years ago, this kind of thing would have been maybe a tendency, it would have been a possibility, but the culture would have discouraged it. Obviously, some still slip through the net. That's all that's happened. But broadly speaking, probably like that girl at your school, she would have been something else. Like she would have been the best Catholic or the most extreme punk or goth or something like that. And then the other girls would have emulated that in her. Whereas in this day and age, of course, it's very easy to do that.
Especially when that's being encouraged by not just your friends, but your like media. It's like, so even in school, my group, because I'm not friends with any of these people anymore, as you can probably imagine. The time they liked me the most was at like the height of gayness. When you're the height of weird, the height of gay, you're like top of the group. The gayer you are, the better. And then as I started like ex-gaying, they kind of slipped back, like compliments stopped, and it was obvious they didn't like you as much. And they now proclaim that it's because I'm racist or whatever, even though I haven't heard any evidence for it. But it's then the less that you fit in with their norms, the more they will find anything about you. And it'll be all the usual, you know, like buzzwords and trigger words of why you shouldn't like someone, even if there's no specific evidence for it. But that only happened when I stopped. Even though my actual opinions didn't change, that only happened when I stopped being gay.
That must be a very painful experience to go through, because obviously in your adolescence and teen years, you're desperate to fit in. And so if you're not getting that social affirmation anymore, must have been very painful for you.
It was at times. I mean, one of them ended up going to the usual leftist tactics, and they used to like bully people, and they made like a false allegation about a guy, and I didn't like it. So I was kind of like, and as much as I liked this person, I wasn't about that. But the rest of it, yeah, it's totally sad. I mean, a lot of these, I've been friends at this point for about 10 to 12 years, and then for them to just suddenly stop talking to you is a, not traumatic, but is at the time like really hard to deal with, which I'm sure you've experienced yourself as well with people.
Oh yeah yeah, several times. It's horrible. I mean, but that's a sign that you are growing in a particular direction, and so it could be good or bad, and they'll try to convince you that it's bad, that you're disappearing into a black hole, I don't know you anymore, and all of this. But that's because your growth challenges their stability. So, yeah, growth is... It always comes with this social cost that you lose friends. Is there anything else you'd want to say about that phase before we move on to COVID and how that affected things?
Oh, the thing I would want to say, is anyone in high school who thinks they're gay, get off the internet, go outside, speak to other people that aren't gay before you text your parents in the middle of geography class. Just take a minute and think, because I still don't hear the end of it 5 years later.
Right. That's very good advice. So then how old were you when COVID struck? I guess you would be 17.
15, 16, and I did my GCSEs in COVID.
Oh, right. So
I only passed because of it.
Right, okay. So how did that, how did the school change with the COVID lockdowns and so on? That did it disrupt everything?
Yeah, Yeah, I think we were off for nearly like a full year. Then you had all like the online classes, and then when you went back, you had to wear a mask, and then people constantly being sent off, teachers are constantly being sent off. There was this like mad hysteria and panic over if someone like coughed or sneezed, and everyone's trying to like rush away from them. It was, they had this whole stupid system as well, where you had to walk like in a like military-esque single file line everywhere, even though the hallway was only about 6 feet wide and the person next to you was like really close. If you're facing the opposite direction, you can't catch anything, apparently, according to the school. But yeah, it wasn't great. Yeah. That whole year was disrupted.
Here's a question that occurs to me now. Is this a middle class area or a working class area? What kind of area was the school and the children in it, the pupils?
Bad. But there's at least one who I know is in prison. Oh, two. One actually for terrorism. But there's at least two I know of that are in prison. And as I said, it was ranked one of the worst schools. There was a Tesco nearby, and they used to have a security guard that would only let two kids from the school in at any given time because robbing was just that prolific. It was not a great school.
Okay, the reason I ask that is how much is... Because COVID, one of the things about COVID is that boys, men and boys, were encouraged to be weak because they're encouraged to obsess about their health and feel very fragile and vulnerable. And in another age, this wouldn't... I just don't think this would have been possible because men were too bolshy, too aggressive, too proud of their own strength. They wouldn't have wanted to seem weak in front of women, and certainly boys wouldn't have wanted to seem weak in front of girls. And I think part of COVID was this sort of emasculating thing. And so in a school like that, I would expect a lot of the boys to rebel against it. But did that not happen?
It's hard to think back, really. I can't say there were many feminine men because most of these are like working class northern lads. So a lot of them still are quite more on the masculine side. I think most of it, though, was people going along from the fear-mongering because they're genuinely scared of catching it. So it became less about what the school wants and more about, like, they are genuinely scared of catching it. In a way, there was some that wouldn't take... But you had as well teachers, like, very on it. Like, if your mask was off even a second, they were, like, straight there. But I can't really think. There wasn't an awful lot of rebelling over COVID. There was a lot of rebelling over a lot of other things, but not COVID. I think people were genuinely like scared.
What were people rebellious about?
Everything they could be, over the food, over the uniform, over anything they could rebel. The boys would rebel. Just standard high school things.
Yeah. Well, I'm wondering about the LGBT stuff.
Ooh, they didn't really care too much. They would just kind of leave you to... I had, funnily enough, one of the guys who's in prison who'd come up to me once at a bus stop and went, "Are you a lesbian?" And I'd gone, "No," because I didn't want to say yeah. And he's going, "You look like one," and walked away. And that was about as far as their rebelling against it went.
Right, okay. So were you sceptical about COVID when it started or what? I mean, what was your... Because I can understand, you know, I'm laughing about teachers being worried, but that's what teachers are supposed to do, right? They're supposed to look after the kids. So I shouldn't be too scathing about that. I mean, that's their job, and they would feel bad. And some teachers are genuinely very caring people. So they think it's a death trap. They think it's very serious. So, of course, they're going to take it seriously. But presumably... Well, what do you think about COVID now in retrospect?
Well, this is probably one of those subjects that gets you in trouble, but this is something I don't really care about saying. I've never had a COVID test, never got vaccinated. I wouldn't wear a mask where I didn't have to, really, and even places you did. That was my form of rebellion. I'd take it off anyway, I don't care. I think it was one massive experiment into population control, not in terms of numbers, but in terms of how much a government can take control of a population, how much they'll accept it in such a short space of time. And I think it was incredibly successful. Because when people go on about the vaccine, what I don't understand is this is an untested vaccine that a government is pushing you to get. They're making it so you can't go anywhere if you don't get it. And people weren't sceptical. I don't understand how you could not be sceptical about that. It's like straight out of a dystopian film. But if someone put that in a film, you'd think, oh, that would never happen. It happened. But if you didn't get the vaccine, it's almost like, well, you must be racist. You must be totally anti-vax. You must be this, that. So, no. I just don't want to put an untested chemical in my body. And I feel after seeing the amount of children and athletes having strokes, made the right choice.
Yeah. I'd definitely say so. Especially since you're young. I mean, it really was not a danger. COVID was not a danger to young people. I think, I can't remember the numbers now, but you had to be something like, oh God, what was it? I think you had to be over 80 in order to have a more than 1 in 20 chance of dying from it. It was something ridiculous like that. Don't quote me for God's sake. I don't want to be done for misinformation or whatever. But it was something like that. And kids and teenagers were practically invincible against it. So it was absurd to be pushing the vaccine on young people.
Well, you remember swine flu, I'm assuming.
Vaguely, yeah.
There was none of this during swine flu. Because they just let it run its course and it went away.
Yeah. There have been various things before this. Swine flu is one of them. SARS, H1N1, I've forgotten what they were called now, but various things where it could have been there was a sort of minor scare. And then it just, as you say, it just blows over. And I think COVID could have been the same thing. I got some bad responses the other night for saying that it was just a bad case of it was just a bad flu.
It was just a bad flu.
Yeah, I mean, some people said that they did know people who died from it. I'm sorry, but I take your word for it. But I didn't. I still don't know anyone who was badly affected by it.
Like, I mean, that many people die from the flu every year as well. It's not the ordinary, but as well you had all the people might get about this, but the lies about the hospitals, where there were tons of hospitals that just were empty. And I think what's dreadful is the amount of people who genuinely needed treatments that were pushed back because of COVID. And I think that is horrific, the amount of people's lives. And as well for the elderly, the loneliness they must have felt locked in the house for over a year. I mean, that is a huge issue with the elderly, loneliness. And that must have been horrific, especially once you've lost a husband or a wife. And then it's, well, your grandkids and your family can't come see. That must have been a genuinely horrific time for them. I think it's awful what the government did.
Yeah, I completely agree. I mean, it's the... We often forget, because we're so busy with our own lives, we often forget what it's like for old people. They have a very different pace of life, and basically they are relying on visits and interactions with young their grandchildren and their children. They're relying on that to have any life at all. So that was just a terrible, cruel thing to do to them. And of course... grandchildren, you know, their grandparents are very important to them. This whole thing, I mean, there are all these different dynamics that were really screwed up by COVID and the lockdowns. And where people are eager to move on from it. I feel bad even mentioning it, but at this point, 4 years later, but I think it's something that I don't think we should dwell on it, but we should definitely remember that this happened and could happen again at any time. People also mentioned foot and mouth and mad cow disease. I do remember mad cow disease. I remember thinking the name was hilarious. I was a child then, and it just sounded funny. It sounded like an insult, you know. But I do remember those. Foot and mouth, that actually happened when I was in Carlisle. I was living there at the time at art college, and I can't remember how this... I think I smelt them burning cows or whatever it was, burning cattle in the fields nearby. I've got a vague memory of that, but I was only 18, so it's a long time ago. But yeah, that's a whole thing. So with COVID, did you find yourself at odds immediately with other people when it happened? Or did your skepticism take a while?
I think for the first 2 weeks, I was a bit worried because my dad had a heart attack a few years previously. And so at first, like, oh my God, what if he catches something? And then after 2 weeks, you know, you're kind of like, man, this kind of isn't real. This all kind of seems orchestrated. Why are we in lockdown? Why, you know? So that's when really the conspiracy theory started, after 2 weeks. And then no one seemed to really care about what I thought about COVID. That was fine. People were like a bit concerned that I wouldn't get a test, but the test seemed really unpleasant and I wasn't willing to get one if it wasn't necessary. So it just didn't sound fun. For what essentially is a cold, it wasn't important. And then I came at odds with people because during lockdown, my dad was rushed to hospital over, funnily enough, an ear infection. But there's actually an ear infection that can cause symptoms of a stroke, which is really horrific. And I feel like more people should know about this because it was terrifying. But he was rushed to hospital. And the gay group, they did not message me once. And that's when that started. But I remember when I went to college, they'd given us a tour of the college. And this was around the end of COVID, really, as it was coming to the end. And at the end of the tour, they went, right, who wants to get a COVID test? Like, for fun. And everyone, bar two people, went to get one for no reason. Like, it was just like a fun part of a tour. And you know, you can't understand the mindset of, like, are you this wrapped up in COVID? You just get a test for no reason. It
like it's a fashion accessory.
Yeah, yeah.
Who wants to take part in the thing?
yeah. Let's all just go get a COVID test. For what? But did you find many people push back at you over your views on COVID?
Well, I mean, I was a public figure by then, so it wasn't, and I'd lost touch with a lot of my family, so I didn't really have to interact with them about this. But I know that in Scotland, it was taken very seriously. Whenever I visited, it was, I would imagine that it's similar in Liverpool, because there's this very strong sort of civic, the sense that everyone has a duty to everyone else, sort of social fabric. And so people took it very seriously. And if you weren't seen to be doing your bit, like wearing the mask, getting vaccinated, social distancing and all that, there were quite, people would say things, you know, it would be a big social faux pas. Whereas in a more diverse area like London, for example, you could get away with it because everyone is so different from each other already. There isn't that social trust. There isn't that cohesion. So yeah. Ironically, in a diverse area, I think it's more difficult to implement something like this. Whereas in a very monocultural, monoethnic area, like where my hometown in Scotland, I think people were kind of devout believers in COVID and the threat from COVID, and they were determined to do their bit to not just to combat the thing, but to do their bit, to fulfill their duty to everyone else. So yeah. That was a big thing. Was it like that in Liverpool?
Oh, as someone who does not leave the house often, I couldn't give like a great explanation of that, but you always felt a bit awkward because I don't know about you, but I never did the clap for the NHS thing. And so when you hear the rest of your street out clapping and all you can think is, oh my God, what do they think of me? Do they think I'm a bad person? I just think it's ridiculous. It's cult-like. But the whole clap for the NHS thing was bizarre. But what I found more bizarre was they had people policing each other, like how you would with the witch trials and with communism. It's very much like what The Crucible is about, where people will police one another. And I find it fascinating how the government could get the citizens to tell on one another because they weren't wearing a mask. And I know, like, there was sometimes, like, a money incentive to do it, but it's like families would cut each other out because, well, you didn't have the vaccine. And that isn't a moral thing. That's, I feel, like, a government-implemented moral that they've told you this is the right thing to do. If someone, and they added that if you don't get the vaccine, well, then you're fine with old people dying. That's just the way it is. You might as well shoot the people yourself if you don't get the vaccine. And so it became very cutthroat, I think, among families and friends over COVID. Such a trivial thing that 2 years later is nothing.
Mm. Yeah, for that time, there was a clear division between COVID skeptics, COVID deniers, vaccine skeptics, and good people. And it didn't exist in 2019. It was suddenly there. It was suddenly a division, a very real social division in 2020 and 21. And then in 22 onwards, it just faded away. But for that time, it was very real. I mean, people, as you said, families were broken up by this. There are probably people still now who aren't talking to each other because of this. They fell out over this.
Yeah.
And I agree. It's there is always that irony about the crucible, the paranoia about who's the witch in our community, who's doing evil. Yeah, that was there, and it was encouraged. I mean, it was encouraged on TV. It was encouraged with all the propaganda. And, you know, I could understand this. It would be justified if the disease was serious, if it was like lots of people are going to die if we don't do this, then obviously it would be justified.
It wasn't the Spanish flu. It was nothing like that. It was most people who had it didn't die.
Exactly. So with all of that said, I guess we should get to your big experience this year, which was, unless there's anything else you'd like to say in the run-up to that.
No, go straight ahead.
Okay. So you got visited by counter-terrorism police. So tell us how that happened and what had you done to make this visit happen?
Well, this has been the big thing. I still don't know. I went through a Freedom of Information request with Free Speech Union, and then sent a few letters of complaint with We Fair Cop, and they still refuse to tell me, just that I've done it. That's all I need to know, I've done it, and don't do it again. Whatever it is. So it was literally just knock on the door, two women, and the way they had done it was, are you Ava Holland? You know, don't worry, you're not in trouble, we just need to speak to you. So I immediately thought, I'm a victim of something, I need to know about this. Oh my God, am I being stalked? You know, what is going on? And so I let them in. My mum was in the kitchen. And they'd said to me, like, are you okay to speak to us alone? You know, you're over 18. And so then I'm thinking, oh my God, it's going to be something really bad they don't want my mum to know about. Like, shit. And so I was like, yeah, come on. We come in the living room. And I said to them, I was like, yeah. Go, okay, we're counter-terror and you've been inciting violence online. Which I actually don't understand how. I don't even agree with violence typically. I'm not even pro-death penalty. And so I ask the obvious questions of, what have I said? We can't tell you. What have I done? We can't tell you. Where did I say it? We can't tell you. And then it came to the fated helmet, where there was a Roman helmet next to them, and one of them had said, that Viking helmet, is that yours? Obviously, because Anglo-Saxon became like a buzzword at that time. I had to correct them, it's Roman, and it's my dad's. It is a painfully Roman helmet as well. Like, I know a bit of Roman history, but anyone who didn't, you'd know it's Roman. It's ridiculously Roman. And so I pointed them to the bookshelf to be like, we have so many Roman books. And keep in mind, they are sat like next to the bookshelf, and they look at it. And on the top shelf is Russian history. On the bottom shelf is like Roman. The third is like the Great Replacement. If any, you just think this is a very confused family. They don't know where they stand with any of this. They're a bit all over the place. And then they asked, we had a decorative samurai sword atop the mantelpiece, and they're like, oh yeah, and we're going to need to take that because it's above this length. And so they call my mum and are like, is it okay if we take the swords? I will know, but you've got to anyway. And then the ridiculous thing, they said this was to combat knife crime. This is their attempt at tackling knife crime, removing 60-year-old men's decorative swords. And my mum got into a moral debate with them and said, but it's the person who commits the crime, not the weapon. And the police officer, I said, well, that's true in most cases. In what case is it not true? In what case is the sword committing the crime? I'm still yet to figure that one out. But, so they left, they didn't leave. They left no receipt for the taken item, they left no reference to visit. So when we called up Merseyside Police the next day, they were like, well, we have no record of this, so you're on your own. And that was, like, one of the comments I kept getting on Twitter, was that, well, you've just been robbed, these were not real police officers. Because the story was, like, ridiculous. People thought it can't be real. Until Merseyside Police came out, I was like, it is real. Well, that's a story, basically.
Bloody hell. What a strange story. I mean, if not for that last bit, I would have assumed that this was a scam. That yeah. These are just people who, I don't know, for whatever reason, they've got some sort of strange hobby where they go they impersonate the police in order to seize people's swords. Very strange hobby to have.
I know some police officer has that sword on their wall right now, and that's what pisses me off the most. It's like taunting me. I know they haven't got rid of it. Someone has it. I know that.
Yeah.
It's frustrating.
So when was this? When did this happen exactly?
This was September this year.
Right. So it's very recent. And you still don't know what it was that... So it was definitely a police visit. That's confirmed. They were police. And they'd obviously been told that you had said something. But you still... I wonder if even they knew what it was that you'd said. Or if,
well, funny you say that. They actually said to me sometimes they're not even told what the person said. And yet they're going out policing them that they shouldn't be saying it. Then they might not even know what it is. Which seems like really bad policing, personally. But
yeah, that is just... I don't know what to say. It's just a bizarre story. But they've confirmed it. So this is a thing where they just go into people's houses and basically intimidate. I mean, that seems to be the only result that can come from this, that they intimidate people into being quiet. I mean, you go.
Oh, sorry, no, it's just on the intimidation point I meant to say. As they left, they'd said to me, you know, just make sure you bite your tongue before you go online, which is a clear threat, but that was just on the point of intimidation. I forgot to mention it.
Yeah, definitely. So, have you any idea, I mean, what kind of stuff were you saying online before that, in the weeks, months before that?
I've racked my brain. Harry Miller scoured my Twitter before he took the case, obviously. I don't really know. The only tweet someone pointed out was that, and I don't know why I did this, but there was a tweet saying, name a white boy with aura, and someone had replied a picture of Hitler, and I'd reposted it because I just found it quite funny. But I don't know if it was that. They never actually said. But I can't think of a time I've incited violence, because I don't even agree with that. Even when the Southport riots went on, I was genuinely not for it, because I thought it was counterproductive to a cause. But, yes. So I don't know where the... If they'd said something else, then I would have thought, okay, maybe. But not inciting violence, I don't know where that... Plus, that's a criminal offence now. Why wasn't I arrested is what I don't understand.
Yeah,
I was arrested, but thank God I wasn't.
Yeah, well, it's a very strange story. I think this must just be a routine. I mean, it sounds like this was just a routine thing where, well, we've got nothing else to do today. Let's follow this up. Let's go on Twitter, find someone. I don't know how else this could have happened. It's very difficult to work out. Especially if there was nothing. I mean, that's the worst thing you'd done online.
Then that's pretty terrible.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, what would you say? Have you talked about COVID?
No, never mentioned it.
No.
Never mentioned COVID online.
Yeah, yeah.
Even inciting violence. That was the claim they gave me, that I incite violence.
Mm. And what, I mean, where do you stand politically? You said that you weren't, would you describe yourself as a Tory?
No, because, well, obviously there's the whole issue with the Tories. They helped with the decline of the country, so I'm not going to vote for them. But I don't know, I feel like most people, there's some things you're one thing and some things you're not. It's like I'm against the death penalty, but that's not because I don't think people should die. I think it's very bad to give a state that power, because the minute they have that power, they decide who gets that. And that's a very slippery slope. And as well, for psychology reasons behind victims and stuff like that. But then other stuff, like migration, COVID, is quite a right-wing belief. So I wouldn't say there's any, like, one very specific label I could give, but the majority of people would call me far right, which is a very easy label to get.
But just because you're anti-migration?
Yeah. Yeah, that's all it takes now.
Oh, yeah. See, that at this point is that it would seem likely to me that you've said something on Twitter about my immigration or diversity or multiculturalism, and that's what triggered this police visit.
I mean, it's a very high possibility that it was really some. But the two things I, especially before the visit, tweeted about most was transgenderism and migration. They were like the two main topics for me. So I'm assuming if it was from Twitter, it's from that. But as well, you do get, with Prevent, you can be referred by someone. So like someone in your life can contact them and be like, hey, check on this person. And so it's always a possibility, I don't know. But
of course, the irony with immigration and transgenderism is that those are two issues that are just going to collide, because people from Africa, you know, Islamists, Muslims in general, are not going to be sympathetic to the transgender cause. And yet we can't, you know, we as natives of Britain are not supposed to say anything about either of those things. So it's like two trucks driving towards each other. But we can't. Yeah. I mean, it's just ridiculous.
But it's all the people. What I can never wrap my head around is all the transgenders and the gay people and the women are fighting for more migration. No, bring more Muslims and bring more Africans. You don't understand. They don't like you. And it's, they moan about Christians. They say Christians are all homophobic. Okay, we don't throw you off buildings, though, do we? Hey, most aren't even that homophobic. They probably just think, hey, maybe not marriage, do what you want, but marriage is a sanctity of God. But Muslims, like, really, as a transgender, you want more? I can't wrap my head around. Or women, where they go on about feeling unsafe, so you agree with stopping migration? No, bring more. What? I don't understand. It's the lack of pattern recognition. I can't wrap my head around it.
When did you first have these ideas? Because I'm guessing that when you were in the lesbian group, if you'd said something like this, this would have been very controversial.
Funnily enough, when I was in the lesbian group, my ideas weren't that much different. Obviously, I didn't think transgenderism didn't exist at that point. I was on board with that, and I thought it was fine, and now I don't. But my nickname was Nazi from the time I was 13, just because I was righter than they were. Like, one of them was an actual communist, and so anything right of that. But because I was the rightest in the group, but because I was gay, they found it funny. It was amusing to them. But when you're straight, it's not amusing. It's not funny anymore. You're just bad. So it's not that I changed dramatically in terms of my opinions. It was I was straight. And so that was the issue. But obviously I got more right as I got older. It probably started about 2 years ago, really, mostly. But actually mostly through my parents. They used to watch like Lotus Eaters and Paul Joseph Watson. And so the more I sat with them and the more you watch, you think, I get it. Like, I agree with all of this. They're saying what I think. And so it just happens.
It's so fascinating to hear about these social dynamics where you can be right wing or whatever, as long as you're a lesbian, it's okay.
Yeah. If I like women, I can say anything. I could call for the extermination of the Jewish, but as long as I like women, it's okay.
That is amazing, because that's the thing that was binding them together. That was the game that you were all playing, as it were. So I mean that in a respectful way. It's the social thing. So as long as you're playing that game, it's fine. Once you created that, then all these other things come up. That's amazing. So do you feel now that, how do you feel now looking back at that phase? I'm guessing it lasted 5 years, 4 years. Do you feel that British culture as it is today, do you think that you were left to your own devices? Do you feel like you were thrown to the wolves? Because some people have been saying in the chat that it sounds like you were led astray. Would you say that in another era you would have been better guided by the adults around you? I mean, the school.
I feel in other eras it wouldn't have been as normalised. And I think social media has probably one of the largest parts to play. You remember Tumblr. And you know what Tumblr was like, especially in like the heyday of My Chemical Romance. And I feel like that's with Tumblr is like the start of things, really. But I think the internet has been drastic. I think that's when it's probably started going downhill. There's more information. I don't even know how to explain it. I think if I wasn't in that group, it would never have happened, essentially. I think it's a culmination of being confused, being, as most teenagers are, depressed, being chronically online too much, and all of it mixed together. You're confused, you're upset, you're being the main form of appreciation you're getting as a low-confidence teen is from your friends when you're gay. And you're going to keep doing that then as well. And online, it's very much celebrated. It's like what you said, being straight is like the vanilla thing, boring thing. You wants to be straight now. It's not fun. I think if it were less normalised and if there were less about it and things were more traditional based and... It's like if you look on media and the government, I think there's a heavy effort to break up the family, to get rid of that traditional sort of nuclear family type of thing, and a lot of that is through like the feminism and the gay agenda and things that will stop the natural family. And I know I'm rambling a bit now, but I'm struggling collecting it all into one big thought.
It's okay, you're doing fine. It's fine.
But either way, in short, had I just stuck with a different group, it wouldn't have happened. In short. And I think kids should probably be more careful. And parents, like, not even just parents, the school, watch a bit more.
Yeah. Well, that's pretty much what I thought. It's dangerous. I mean, it's a difficult time being an adolescent. There are all these pitfalls, especially now when the culture tells you that these pitfalls are fine, they're great. So what are you going to do? Where do you see yourself now? I mean, several people have been asking, they're saying, I hope this girl's married and going to have a family and so on. Is that what you see as your future, or are you still quite non-conformist, let's say.
No, I would like to get married. And as much as childbirth terrifies me, as it should all women, who wants to do that? That sounds actually horrific. But yeah, obviously I'd like a family as most people would. I mean, I'm only 20, so I'm not married at this point in time. But that type of life, I think, most people deep down want, whether they realise or not. And I think that's one of the sad things, especially with feminism, that it tells women what you want when it's not really. And by the time they realise, it's too late.
Yeah, yeah. Do you think other girls from that group at school, do you think others of them might be have made a similar journey as you? Obviously not the right-wing views, but just into heterosexuality.
Oh, well, actually, I'll give you an update on all of them separately, because I know what they're all doing, because I have mutual friends. One of them, I think, is anorexic now, and I think she has a boyfriend. The other one is obese and can't decide if she's straight or gay. Like, she just switches depending on the day. One of them is transgender, but has changed their gender multiple times and is also obese. And the other one, the main one, the one we all wanted to be, is now transgender and actually stopped speaking to me because I said I like Morrissey. That was the reason.
Right. Dear, dear. What a lot of confusion.
That's why I had the last
laugh. Yeah, yeah, yeah. Well, Morrissey's not a bad choice.
You're a fan.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. I mean, I'm not really into the Smiths, but I certainly admire him as a person. I think he's one of the very few who've actually spoken their mind and been honest. How many celebrities can you say that about? It must be very, very few. Very few musicians. So, yeah, I approve of that. Well, that's amazing. It's sad. It's sad because you think that's five girls who are 20 and they should be okay. There's no, they have. I mean, you have to blame that because it wouldn't have happened in a previous generation. Like 30 years ago, it wouldn't have happened.
No.
So you have to blame it on the state of the culture today. And it's good that you've found your way to something more that seems likely to bring you happiness. I don't think you're going to be anorexic or obese or whatever.
Not funny.
Yeah, sounds like you're going to be fine. So yeah, well. That's great. This has been an interesting conversation. It's been an unusual one for a millennial, but I've enjoyed it. And I think the commenters have too, and I hope you have as well.
I have.
All right. I'll get there. Have been a few super chats. Alt White said, "Merry Christmas." Thank you very much.
Merry Christmas.
The Woodlander said, "Here's a fiver, just so that Ava stays not gay."
You see, Jesus here is keeping me straight. Every time I get the urge, I'll come and pray it away.
All right. That's a cliche, isn't it? Pray the gay away.
It works. It works, everybody.
All right. And then Thin Red Line said, "Stay straight, find a nice young man and start a family."
The plan.
And Maybe Next Time said, "Wozie, get Howard Stern and Noam Chomsky on Millennial to discuss COVID measures." Well, I think he's saying that I'm bringing up too much, and I'm sorry. It's just, it seems natural. It seems like a natural thing to bring up. It seems relevant still. But obviously, I know it's 4 years ago. And, I'm kind of bored with it as well. I mean, I wouldn't want to talk about it for an hour at this stage. But to mention it, I think, is quite natural.
It was a huge thing.
Yeah, it was. I mean, for all of us, it was something we lived through. We're probably not going to live through something like that again in our lifetime. So, and then Darby said, "The dating space for Zoomers is an absolute hellscape." I don't know if Darby is a Zoomer himself, but you're certainly one. So what would you say about that? The dating space is a hellscape.
I imagine it's worse for men than for women. I think porn addiction and dating apps and social media and feminism have ruined any possibility of normal dating as well. It's because everything now is sexual harassment. You can't even go up to a woman in a bar and offer a drink because it's harassment now. In its, say, like, if you went back to the 80s, a gym would be a normal place to pick someone up, right? If you do it now, you might as well be a rapist. If she catches you on camera looking at her, you're done. You're out. And so I think it's quite a scary time to try and... As well, because there's so much choice now with phones, there's just that much choice. You know, I have trouble making people, like, stick around. It's okay getting someone to talk to you, but after a week they're bored. So that's the state of things. I can't say it's great, but...
Yeah, I think that, and this has come up with quite a few discussions on Millennial this year, that the social fabric is frayed, and socializing, things that used to be just normal and easy. And where within my adulthood, like 20 years ago, you know, people socialized a lot more than they do now, and they talked a lot more than they do now, and there was just more an easier atmosphere, and certainly not the threat of being accused of sexual harassment or whatever, which is a big thing nowadays. And yeah, so what are guys going to do? I mean, it obviously is going to stop men in their tracks. It's going to terrify them because no one wants to be accused of that. Okay. Finally, Aunt Sally. Hello, Aunt Sally. I know you're I know you from other streams, so welcome. She says, Ava is an inspiration to our young women. Thank you for having her as a guest. Wow.
That's
welcome.
So sweet. Thank you. It's made my night.
That's nice. Yeah, okay. Well, is there anything that you'd like to say, just to summarize all of this and before we finish?
If the police knock on your door, don't let them in. Record it. Don't be gay. Don't get the vaccine.
All right. Excellent. Okay, well, this has been great. So thank you very much, Ava, for agreeing to do this. And as I said, I hope this doesn't bring you any heat, because I am quite a controversial figure, and I was a bit... concerned about having someone as young as you on the show, because I don't want people to assume that you agree with all of my views. You know, that it's ridiculous that we need to say this. If we were on the left, we would never need to say this. But obviously, we're just two people having a conversation.
Yeah, you probably disagree with some of mine, and I disagree with probably some of yours, but you can have a conversation with someone, and at the end of the day, I would rather stick to something you believe in and get heat than have to lie and say something you don't believe in just to avoid publicity, which I imagine is what you've arrived to if you're still doing this after all the heat you've had.
Oh yeah.
A little bit.
Yeah, it just feels like, well, at this point I might as well be honest. So all right. Well, Ava, this has been a pleasure. So thank you for appearing on Millennial X.
Thank you for asking me. I was honoured to get the invite.
All right. You're welcome. I'll be back shortly with the Distributist. But in the meantime, Ava, thank you for appearing.
Merry Christmas, everybody.
See you all later.
We hope you're enjoying Millennial. The festival goes on. But how about giving something back to your tireless host? There are many ways to make a cash donation. Find all of these at millennial.com/donate. Your kindness will be warmly appreciated. Millennial amounts to 3 months of work for the vile vlogger. Please help him to keep the lights on.